Welcome to the German Genealogy Girls podcast. I am your host, Ursula Krause from Berlin, Germany. Join me as I dive into German genealogy. You will receive first-hand information on the best resources and techniques, German history, and all you need to know when it comes to German research. And now, let's get started. Welcome to the German Genealogy Girls podcast. Those of you who have listened to my other podcasts know that I usually have a guest, and my guests are usually sitting in the US and we're talking through the internet. But today, someone very special is joining me and she's sitting right next to me. Welcome, Ute Brandenburg.
Thank you, Ursula. I've been in Berlin for a few days and the two of us have talked research and we had ice cream and it's just been a wonderful visit with you. So I'm happy to be doing this podcast with you.
And I'm really happy to have you here with me. So, Ute, those of the very few people out there who don't know you, they're eager to know more about you. So please tell us more.
Well, I'm an American by birth, but I grew up in Germany. And I went to school and to college here and have now been living back in the United States for quite a while. So I am really someone with a foot in both countries, I feel. I do genealogy. I've done it since I was a teenager because my father got me interested in it. I have Americans who were of German descent in my family. So my father was always interested in researching and I kind of grew up thinking this was a cool thing. So for my time in America, I have been doing my own research. And then for the last couple of years, I have built my business where I am now almost full-time doing research for others. And I specialize in reading German. I'm German scripts. I like to track people who came to the United States where their descendants don't know where they were from. And that's something I'm pretty good at, is finding out what part of Germany they came from. And yeah, and then I just love old records. So I enjoy researching in old German handwritten records, and I could do that day and night.
And for those of you out there, I can tell you Ute is a wizard when it comes to the old German script, to deciphering it. So she's really good at that.
Thank you. I love puzzle work, I guess. So
yeah.
So
yeah.
The more mysterious it is, the more fun I have with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but that's all what genealogy is about, right? It's about puzzling.
Yeah, I guess I feel like a detective often.
Yeah, that's what we are. Mm-hmm. So, but we didn't really want to talk about puzzling or doing detective work. What we are going to talk about today is ancestral travel to Germany. I know that many of you out there have been to Germany already, have done, partly even done research at the archive, or maybe are planning to come soon. So we're just going to give you some tips, some hints, going to tell you about more what to do and what to expect and what not to expect. So maybe those of you who haven't traveled yet will receive some important information, and some who haven't planned may be curious to come to Germany in the future. So what we want to talk about today are the many different things you can actually do in Germany. You can just do, say, tourist trip and visit Germany and look at old castles and the beautiful German landscape and do the timber-framed houses and the River Rhine, so you can do a Rhine cruise. And there are many things just to look at. And you can have food, German food, the good German Bratwurst maybe, or yes. Sauerbraten.
Yes, you wouldn't want to leave without having tried the regional specialties and the
yeah.
wonderful ones in all different parts of Germany.
Yeah, I love the Spätzle most, actually, from southwest Germany. Highly recommendable. But maybe you don't want to do this tourist stuff. You just want to go and meet your ancestors, so to say. So you want to go directly to the place they came from, Mecklenburg, Baden, Württemberg, Bavaria, Franconia, Brandenburg, Saxony, Hesse. So there's a lot to see. And many of you probably will have more than one place, specific place in Germany to look at, because you have one part of the family, maybe from Mecklenburg and the other from Baden. Mm-hmm. So you will have quite a trip through Germany. Today we just want to tell you more how to travel, what to see, what to expect, and what not to expect. Right. And the way you travel, and the difficulties and the big fun. So let's go, Ute.
Well, which part do we start with? General travel or ancestral travel? I think the big thing to consider is if you really do want to have a research component or want to really learn something about how your ancestors lived, I think you really need to start planning your trip way ahead of time. You know, it's easy to book a flight and plan a tourist trip to Germany. You don't need to plan that far ahead. But if you want to learn about what your ancestors' lives were like, if you want to really get something out of the genealogy part of the trip, you need to start planning a year at least ahead.
Yeah.
Actually, this just happened just twice this month that I got emails from people, oh, we're going to Germany in June, and we think our ancestor came from about this region. Can you tell us, can you help us prepare for that? That's not a lot of time if there's research involved. So especially if you need to find more records, and you would want to find as much as you can before you go, then it really makes a difference if you plan far ahead.
Yes, I totally agree. You need to be 100% sure of the exact place your ancestors came from. So if you only have a passenger record, for example, that shows Prussia, you have a lot of research ahead of you. Or maybe it has just a large town. And then you get there and then you find that they have not been born there at all. And they just said when they arrived, oh, we came from Berlin, but in real life they lived 100 miles away from it. So you definitely need to have some kind of German record that gives you the exact place of birth.
Right. And these records are oftentimes much easier to access from your home in the United States or from online, actually. A lot of people will also say, well, we're going to be in this town, and what do we do? Do we go to the church where we can then see the records? And they don't realize that in most cases, these records are not at the church, but they're in an archive. And oftentimes, they've been digitized, and you can do the research very comfortably ahead of time. If you arrive in a town wanting to do research, wanting to find records, you may be out of luck, because most likely they're not in the town, but in an archive. And then to visit an archive also takes some planning. I guess we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Let's start talking with general advice when you travel to Germany. Many of you ask yourselves, how do I get around? Well, Germans love going by train. Going by train actually is really nice in Germany, isn't it, Ute?
It's one of the things I miss most, actually. It's one of the things I missed most living in the United States. I just love train travel. German trains are comfortable, and you can just... Train travel in its own is a way of seeing the country, because you see the beautiful towns that you pass through in the landscape. So I very much recommend it. You can get almost anywhere in Germany by train. Let's qualify that with almost, not completely everywhere, but you can get many places by train. And it's comfortable. It's generally pretty reliable in Germany.
And it's fast.
It's fast, yes.
It's much faster than going by car, actually.
Oh, absolutely. I can get from Hannover, where I came from to see you, in under 2 hours. And yeah. Very comfortable.
Yeah. It's 4 hours from Berlin to Munich.
And it's worry-free, you know. If you're exactly. not used to driving in Germany, that if you want to drive, and you may need to get a rental car, I think it's important, first of all, you probably don't want to drive a stick shift, so you have to reserve a car that's not a stick shift. Most Germans drive stick shift. You can
exactly.
get them too, but make sure you qualify that when you get your rental car. The traffic rules, Germans are orderly people, and actually the roads are good. There's something to be said for getting a rental car, because it can take you places that, especially if you have ancestors from small villages or remote areas, you will need to do that yeah. to really get around
yes,
and see things.
Yes, you do. If you're like have ancestors in Mecklenburg, You can go to maybe a town that has a train station, but usually if you really go to the small villages, there's no bus, or maybe the bus goes once in the morning, once in the evening, so you will definitely need to rent a car. It's also hard to get a taxi. There are taxis, but you have to book them. So you have to call mm-hmm. them and make an appointment, and then maybe you will have somebody who will drive you around the day. So that's that would be an idea as well if you don't want to drive. But usually if you're on the countryside, it's easy to drive. And I hear that renting a car is much more expensive in Germany than it is in America.
Yes.
I'm not experienced
yes.
with that.
For me, it's been worth it for various reasons. And I think a lot of tourists really get stuck in the towns. And not that you shouldn't see the wonderful towns, but if you overcome your fear of maybe getting a car and it'll take you to completely new experiences, the little villages that you would never see otherwise are so much more likely to be what your ancestor experienced.
Yeah. Sometimes I actually leave the motorway and just drive through the small villages mm-hmm. just to get to know the country I live in. Because, of course, Germany is rather big and we don't know everything, haven't seen everything. So it's always my goal to see as much as possible. And sometimes it's really nice just going through the countryside instead.
Well, actually, my dad and I were in Bavaria and Bohemia 3 years ago together on an ancestral trip. And we had a rental car. And we went into the most remote little areas of farms in Bavaria, and we actually found the farm that his ancestor had lived on, and it was just a little one-lane roadway. And if we hadn't prepared for the trip and really known the records and then had that car to just go out and go wherever we wanted, the trip would not have been half as interesting. So that was just a wonderful experience, just having that freedom to go and find the places.
Yeah, exactly. So we would recommend getting a car, if you go to the countryside. If you have ancestors from Berlin, of course, you won't need anything.
Yeah.
We also have excellent public transportation in Berlin that is safe.
Yeah,
and
every major city has good public transportation, and it's
exactly.
not expensive. And if you want to sightsee in a city, you can just get a day ticket for the subway or streetcars or whatever there is, and it's a wonderful way to get around a city. So you don't need a car.
Yeah, sometimes they even have this kind of tourist tickets, and they also include museums, for example.
Yeah.
So it might be worth looking into that. And you can go to the next tourist office, and often they also sell these tickets. So it's easy.
Yeah, and I think actually back to driving, I think driving in a big city is more scary.
Yeah.
If you're an American, because we're used to roadways being in a grid and predictably numbered, and German old cities grew differently.
Yeah.
So it can be quite confusing.
Yeah.
So
I hardly ever drive when I'm in the cities. I always take public transport because it's much easier and much more relaxing. And it's also very nice to watch the people, I think. So if I'm in a foreign country, I always take public transport and just watch the people. So, and especially in Berlin, being so multicultural, you will have all the nations all in one stuff. So one place. So you just go by public transport for half an hour and you've seen the world.
True.
So that's really nice.
Yeah.
So we talked about transportation and getting around. How about hotels? Hotels are rather easy to book. Naturally, you can do all that on the internet. But if you're doing ancestral travel, maybe you want to do something very special and maybe stay on the countryside, in maybe even the village your ancestors lived in a small inn. And of course, these they're not as comfortable as a 4 or 5 star hotel. They're probably not going to have Wi-Fi. They're certainly not going to have air conditions, because Germans aren't so much into air conditions as Americans are.
True. But they might not even have a website. I mean,
if
you're traveling through the backcountry in the small villages, there's always going to be a little pension that has a room to rent, you can always find a room, unless it's a very touristy area.
Yeah,
it's not hard to find inexpensive accommodations exactly. just about everywhere.
Yeah. And very often they're very cozy. And the best thing is that often they're run by people who are locals and have been there for centuries.
And might be able to tell you things. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Probably they're related to you. So you might find that. But I found the place that my great, 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 great grandparents lived in. There's still an inn that was there at the time they lived there.
Oh, wonderful.
And they have a part that isn't renovated, so you can really look at it. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool, going there and thinking, oh my God, this is where my great-great-great-great-grandfather had a beer.
Wonderful.
And that's amazing. So that's mm-hmm. something you can find. Mm-hmm. Also something that those of you who have ancestors from Mecklenburg is very often we have these old estate houses that were turned into hotels. And they're a bit luxurious and they're really nice places to stay. So you have quite a good chance of the estate where your ancestors lived on actually has a hotel, is a hotel now. And I have done that. So I stayed at the estate house of the place my great-great-great-grandmother was born in 1801. And
wonderful.
I felt it had some kind of spirit. And it was really, really nice. And I have more ancestors and with estate houses. So I have more sleeping to do there.
And as you're telling this, I'm thinking, oh, yes, this is something we need to say. As an American, you'll see that there are standard hotel brands all over German cities, too. There's Best Western. There's everything there. Have the courage to go somewhere else.
Exactly.
The German hotels are good. You're not going to have a really bad experience, very unlikely. And just have the courage of finding something less known, just rent a room. You're going to have so much more, as Ursula just said, of a more personal experience than if you stay in something that's just like you have it at home.
Exactly, exactly. But it's not as luxurious. So if you're looking something that is really upper standard, you might not get lucky
maybe.
I think it's worth
Let me add one thing, though, that I saw. You can now also stay in castles. And there is a castle
exactly.
on the Rhine River that we stayed at the youth hostel nearby, but we came and looked at it, and it was very expensive and luxurious. But it was a little hotel, and we ate there, and it was wonderful food, and you could pick a little castle room, and
yeah.
you can find things like this.
I think it's on top of a tower, isn't it? So you overlook
yeah.
the entire Rhine Valley.
Yes.
So that
there are more and more places like that.
I
would absolutely. Have courage to do something more unusual.
Exactly, exactly. So you will find information if you go contact the tourist office of this very region, or maybe of a larger town next by.
Yeah.
So you will find information about these kind of hotels, accommodations. Food
is good in Germany. Beer is good in Germany. You can't go wrong. And again, you know, we have standard American fast food, too. Don't do it.
No.
Go in any traditional German restaurant. Food is not expensive in Germany. If you're coming from America, it's very comparable or even less expensive just to eat out. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Very high quality often.
Yes. And you will want to experience anywhere you travel. You will want to experience the local food. And that's part of your travel of your cultural experiences, to taste the cuisine of the country you go to. And where better could you do that than in Germany? You will want to know, though, this is something in general when you travel to Germany you need to know, is that you can't always pay with credit cards. It's still, you can get gas with credit cards. In department stores, you can pay with credit cards. Hotels, obviously. But if it's like
but
a
not
small,
in every hotel. If it's a small
if it's
hotel
a small,
on
private
the countryside.
One, right. And in restaurants or just convenience stores, you should always have some cash with you.
Yeah. That's, Germans are cash people.
Uh-huh.
And they're trying to get us to use our credit cards more often. But we resist. And I think we're the only Europeans, the only country in Europe who does that, but we just love our cash.
Yeah.
And it's still also at the archives, you can only pay with cash. So always have cash with you. Try to also have coins with you.
Mm-hmm.
You might need them to buy a ticket at a ticket machine or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about cash, mainly.
Yeah. I'd like to say just in general about travel to Germany, because again, Americans come from this large country and it's huge, and you see tiny Germany on the map and you think, oh, well, we can see a lot. Don't plan too much.
Yeah.
Don't plan to see too much in too little time. It's just not, you're not going to get the best experience. You don't have to see everything. Just focus on one or two areas. Really spend a few days in an area. Get to know your ancestral home in depth, rather than trying to cover 5 cities in 3 days or 3 countries in 5 days. That just, it's
the Japanese way.
Yeah, it's just, you can always come back, but I think you're going to have a much more meaningful experience if you don't rush to too many places.
And those of you who don't really know what to do and just want to get an idea first, I would highly recommend just taking a guided tour where everything is planned, and then you can do Germany, then you get an idea of how it looks like. Maybe you can go to some places already that your ancestors lived at, or maybe to the immigration museums in Hamburg and Bremen, which we're going to talk about later. You know, just to get an idea, and then maybe come back a few years later, and then having done your research, and then saying, okay, this year it's Mecklenburg.
Yeah, that's...
So that might also be an idea, that you just start with a kind of ancestral trip that will give you an idea of the culture, of the heritage, of the history of Germany, so that you know what Germany is about. And then the next step would be really a focused trip to do research, for example, or to really see the area your ancestors came from. Now we talked food, talked hotel, we talked getting around. There's something that I have to tell you about that you simply can't go to Germany without having seen one of the open air museums. I love open air museums. Nearly every area has one. These open air museums, they really have the old houses, which they broke down and rebuilt in kind of villages. And I remember when I was a kid, the beginning of the 70s, that they were just starting these open air museums, and everybody said, oh, why are they keeping these old houses? And what is this good for? And I remember these discussions, and I remember when being in elementary school that we went to see one, and I loved it. I just walked through and thought, oh, this is so great, even as a kid, because it has such a power, and it was so nicely done, and you could really imagine your ancestors living there. And they have old smithery and a lot of different crafts that they talk about. So there are people they have people there working there, actually. So you can ask them, and many of them even speak English, and you will get a lot of information about the craft maybe your ancestors had. And you have a bakery that has an old oven and an old school that you can see how your ancestors sat there.
You walk into the farmhouse and it smells like straw roof and fireplace, and you have this experience of this multi-sensory experience of not just seeing a picture of it, but really feeling the air and smelling the place and the cold air and the sounds.
Yeah.
And they actually sometimes have animals there. And yes, I totally agree with you, Ursula. There are 2 open air museums in the northwestern part of Germany that I have visited a number of times. And I could go back again and again.
Yeah.
It's just so wonderful and overwhelming, really, especially I'm thinking of the one near Aulich, where they had Moors, and the Moor settlers came in the 1700s, and they lived under unbelievable conditions, just in tiny little huts, and you can look into these huts, and those were my ancestors, and they persevered, and of course many didn't make it, but that's why I'm here today, because those people were not afraid to come settle in this area and live in these little huts. And it's just you see yourself in a new light when you have this experience.
Yeah, and it's also a way of learning more about timber framed houses, for example.
Of course.
Because the ones that we see when we go to the towns, all of them are nicely, or most of them are nicely renovated, but But they're modern. So yeah. If you go inside, they're modern. They have modern bathrooms and everything. But it's much nicer to see how did people live then. And that, for example, they didn't have an oven, that there only was a fireplace, and otherwise you couldn't heat the house. Mm-hmm. And all these things, how cold it must have been.
Right.
And also how they sat together. So you can really imagine your ancestors sitting together at the fireplace and, of course, not watching TV, but telling stories and singing songs.
Yes, doing handiwork and patching.
And repairing.
Yes.
So you can really close your eyes and see them there. So open-air museums are a must.
And tourists will see castles, and you have the same experience there, just the cold, damp inside of the castles. And that is, of course, you should do that too. But that's where everyone goes. And you don't really see that many Americans in these open-air museums. I think they're just not on people's radars.
Yeah.
And
because often they're a bit on the countryside, so they're right. not directly in town. So I think that people, they just overlook them.
Yeah. But you mentioned that people speak English, and I just have to say, yes, all Germans learn English in school, and you will, in the cities anyway, but also historical, any places you go that tourists would go to, I think you can always expect that there will be someone who would speak adequate English to answer your question. So that's a fear you do not need to have when you come to Germany, that there's a language barrier.
Yeah, it might be a bit tricky in what was the GDR before East Germany,
right.
if you're really coming to the countryside. But my experience is that even if they don't speak English, they're really willing to talk to you, so to say. So you can make yourself understood, and they can make themselves understood. So don't be afraid of that. They are really nice, and a smile sometimes takes you a long way.
Yeah.
So I think I don't really see that as a problem.
Not at all. We were talking about these museums that you can see and getting a local tour guide. I just wanted to check in on that again. That's also a question I get from people who plan trips to Germany is do they have a genealogical society that we can go to, like we do in the United States, where someone will help you, tell you about the town? They don't have quite that, but German cities, or German villages especially, will often have something called a Heimatverein or a Geschichtsverein, which is an organization that preserves history and genealogy, and those are volunteer organizations, and you won't find them in a library that's just open. You'll have to do a little investigating, but my experience has been that if you can find this organization for a town, and often you can do that just by Googling, you might very well find a local history buff who would just love to meet the descendants of
immigrants. And actually, he's probably your cousin.
He may be related to you.
There's a good chance that he's related to you.
We've heard stories like that, haven't we?
Absolutely.
And so you might be able to find someone who would just love to meet you and show you around. And again, this is something you need to plan ahead and do a little research. But oftentimes, if you just do some checking into it, you can come up with non-typical tourist things that just won't happen if you don't investigate. So
yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely worth looking into. And often they will also, they also have a lot of genealogical information there. For example, the church records. So they have copies of the church book, for example. Sometimes they even have a database.
Yes, so it wouldn't necessarily be in the pastor's hand, but it might be in this local history
exactly.
organization.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I had that once that I could easily solve a case within half an hour. Called them, and of course I had a cousin on the phone, and the president of this society was another cousin. So it was, I mean, the entire town was his cousins. so that was rather easy. So we got all the information, and they told us exactly the farm they had lived on and the history of the farm. So that was really nice. So my client went there a few weeks later and met 200 of his cousins
wonderful.
Right away.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, but that's in certain areas. You're probably not going to find that in Mecklenburg or so, because so many towns or the small villages are so mixed by now.
Right.
So many people left for political reasons. A lot of refugees that were in areas that are now Poland. So they are there. So there are certain towns in Brandenburg, for example, that don't have any of the original population there living, and all of them are refugees who came after World War II.
This is interesting, because your family history is primarily in what was Eastern Germany,
exactly.
And mine is primarily in Western Germany. So we're coming at it with some very different perspectives here.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's news to me that it would be so difficult in the East.
Yes. Yeah. Research in East Germany is very different from research than it is in West Germany, because there are much less sources. They simply don't have these roots, I would think.
Right.
And most of you know, who have ancestors from the East, that Saxony and Thuringia Saxony-Anhalt hardly have any records online. So Saxony is starting now with the Evangelical Church records. They're coming from to Archion now. But it's going to take years and years and years. And Saxony-Anhalt and Thuringia haven't even started yet. So they're not even joined the gang, so to say.
Yeah.
So that's going to take a long time. And it has something to do with roots. You will not find so many rooted people there, or people who really want to know how they are connected. Mm-hmm. They live in small towns and they know that they are connected because they grew up together, and they know that their grandparents and great-grandparents are somehow connected, but they're not really interested in really putting it on a piece of paper or something. They just know, and that's enough for them.
Yeah.
So it simply is not this common yet to do a family tree. And that makes it much more complicated, especially if nothing's online. But it's coming. It's coming. This clear genealogy is coming in Germany. And
we should talk again in 10 years and just see where it's moved to.
Yeah.
Because it's a very exciting time to be doing genealogy.
Yeah. But I think that what happened in the last 10 years is amazing.
It's phenomenal.
With all the online information. And now planning a trip is so much easier.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And even with hotels and accommodation and everything is so much easier with the internet.
Right.
So that's hooray for the internet. So we talked about so many things now, and now I want to hear more from Ute, talk about the Auswandererhaus in Bremen. I haven't been there yet, but Ute, you have last week.
I was just there last
amazing,
week, and I've actually heard ahead of time from many Americans, some of my clients had been there, what an amazing place that was. And so I took my dad, who is 86 and who was just visiting in Germany as well, and the two of us made an outing of it. And we drove up. It's in Bremerhaven, which was the harbor for Bremen. It was established in 1827, so that because so much more shipping was happening, they developed their own harbor city. So that was where many Americans left from. The two main ports in Germany were Hamburg and Bremen. There were more, but those were the majority of immigrants left through those two. And so Bremerhaven is kind of out of the way. You have to get there. Rental car is advised, although you can take a train.
There
is a train. There is a train. But actually, just what we were saying, we took a car and we saw all these wonderful little villages out there where no tourist comes to, way up in the north. It was just so beautiful, all the straw-covered roofs. And so just the traveling up there was wonderful. But so this museum, I would like to do it again, just this, a second time. It is an all-round experience. You get assigned a person. So you get a little flyer that tells you you are this person and you emigrated in this year, and find out more about yourself. So you have a mission. You don't have to do it that way, but that's one way to do the museum is to track this person and find what happened to them at the different steps. So you have your card, and then you walk into a large room that is staged as the when you get on the ship where people's the K. Is that what you say in English?
Yeah.
It's a K. It's Kai in German.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You speak German. Oh,
yeah.
Forgot. And so it's this big dark room, and there's this big ship wall, and it's all done with sounds. Again, just like I was saying about the smell in the open air museum. They really put thought into the full body experience of what our ancestors went through. And there are all these figures, life-size figures, that are sitting there ready to travel, and the people who come in look just like them. So you really feel like you're in this crowd. And as you walk through, you hear them speak in different languages. And what's actually happening is they're reading from letters that people wrote back home about their travel experiences. So you're among these immigrants, hearing their thoughts, the thoughts of real immigrants that they had at this time. And then the next step is you get on the ship. And even the floors are crooked. It really feels like you're on a ship, and you hear the waves. And it takes you through the accommodations of ships at different times in history. And you see, how awful it was for earlier immigrants.
Smelly, I suspect.
Well, and there I must say that they didn't quite get the smelly
Thank
aspect.
God.
But yes. But so the sound effects included snoring and coughing. And so you have all these sounds of crowds of people that are not pleasant. And you see these cramped quarters where people had to sit in for weeks, because this was before the arrival of the steam engine, or the steamboats in the 1850s. It took many weeks to cross the Atlantic. And they had very meager provisions. Often their food went bad. People got food poisoning. Everyone was together, cramped together on these little bunks. And it was, I would say, almost terrifying to see, to be in this place. And for all the research I've done, this was a completely unexpected experience for me, to stand in this steerage accommodation of an 1850s ship. And then you moved on and you saw some improvements. And you could also look through windows and see what it was like in the first class. And by the time we got to the 1920s, it was really quite comfortable. So your ancestors who came over before 1860 or so had a completely different experience than those that came in the early 1900s. And it must have taken so much courage.
Yeah.
And on the way, there are stories you can read about ancestors. There's a lot to experience that I probably even missed. There are so many ways you can go in this museum. But then you arrive at Castle Garden, and it shows you the waiting areas. And it's almost also kind of claustrophobic. There are all these people sitting in these gated, squeezed into these gated areas. And you could be turned away if you were found not to be healthy, or if you couldn't answer the questions. And every immigrant just had a few minutes to answer those questions. And then the agent had to decide if you would be admitted or not. So it must have been very terrifying to arrive at New York. It would have been exciting, but also really terrifying.
Yeah, I suspect that.
And yeah, and so the museum takes you through this whole process, and then you go to Central Station in New York, and that is kind of recreated. Not quite as grand as the original, and then you can continue your journey, because most immigrants hadn't arrived. They had to continue on by train, or in earlier days by boat, to the Midwest or wherever they were going.
I believe mine went by boat to Chicago.
Yeah, because the railway didn't arrive until the 1850s, 1860s. So I'd have to check those numbers, but the earlier immigrants had the best way to travel was by waterway.
Yeah. So, might have been cheaper as well.
Possibly, yes.
I would think the train might have been more expensive.
So anyway, that was a long story, but this museum is absolutely, I don't know if there's anything quite like it elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So it's a must.
It's if you are, at least if you're Northern Germany, you should make sure to go there. It's It has a 5-star rating wherever you look, and I would say yes, that was
a great
what
experience.
I would give it to. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's also something you need to put on your list. Besides the open air museums, you have to go to the Auswanderhaus in Bremerhaven.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, we talked about pretty general things so far. Let's get more into detail if you really want to do a research trip, what you have to think about. Well, we already said that you need to start in advance, about a year in advance. You need to know the exact town. You need to decide if you really want to do research there, if you might want to go to an archive, if you are looking for a grave, if you are meeting family, maybe you already know family, or maybe you know they have family and you want to locate them. Also, that is something that you have to start in good time. Germans like to have it a bit organized.
Right.
They don't like somebody just ringing their doorbell and say, "Hi, I'm your cousin from America," and they would say, "Okay, goodbye," and slam the door into your face. You might not want that. So that's something that
Germans are generally very friendly, but they do not like surprises.
Yes, and they're very much into their privacy.
Right.
I've had that several times where I found cousins, and all these were immigrants that left like in the 1920s, 1930s, so they were still aware that there was family there. They would never invite us home to their own places, like Americans would. They just open their house and give you a cup of coffee and a piece of cake. But Germans don't do that. Yeah. They're much more private, and they want to get to know you first before they welcome you into their house, because their home is their castle, and it's holy, and they don't invite strangers.
That's true.
Home. So that's something that you really need to... You need to get to know your hosts before, you need to really know how you are related. There are always exceptions. I've had that too. But then it was always that everyone was so sure that it was a cousin. And very often it were people who had lived abroad as well, and who spoke English very well, who were very open-minded, who would much easier open their home.
Yeah.
But mostly I found that people are very reserved and they simply need to open up a bit, and many won't.
That's true. And, you know, then move on.
It's
not everyone shares the same interest in finding roots, and you have to respect that then.
Yeah. And it has nothing to do with you being American or a language problem or so. It would happen with Germans as well. So I have parts of family who simply aren't interested in me having the knowledge and having the stories about their family. They're just not interested. They have the life of their own and they don't want to know. So that's just the thing. It's something that you have to deal with. So don't be sad if you don't find relatives, or you find relatives and they don't really want to deal with you. That's just the way we are, right?
Thank you for letting me in your house, Ursula.
Yeah, I have a good day.
Archives, maybe.
Archives, exactly. That's a big thing.
So sometimes you do need to do archive research here. Maybe you're looking for something like estate records or so that won't be online, or maybe it's an area that still just isn't available. Even church records aren't available, and you found that they are available at an archive, say the one in Berlin that we went to yesterday. There's a Lutheran church archive that has records that are only accessible there at this moment. That'll probably change eventually, but right now that's the only place we can research them. So if you have been to the Family History Library in Salt Lake, then you're very spoiled. Because you can go there at 8 in the morning and you can stay there all day, and they're not going to charge you, and you can do research as much as you like until you've fall down.
Yeah, and they're
exhausted.
Really nice and helpful.
Nice, helpful. The doors are open.
You can make copies or digitize scans.
Yeah. You can. Yeah. Everything.
Something we're dreaming of here.
Yes. Well, it depends on the archive a little bit. There are some German archives where that's very good, and some that are just still in olden times and their technology. So it's important to know, if you want to visit an archive in Germany, there are a few things that are very different than say, at the Family History Library, you must make reservations.
In time,
yes. Do it a couple weeks ahead so that, A, you're sure they're actually open on the day you want to come, because they're not always open. They might have a summer holiday. The one in Bavaria I went to was closed for 2 weeks just for summer holiday. Yeah. Or if it's a federal holiday, and there are quite a few in Germany, it might be closed. Some archives are not open on Fridays in general. So you want to check their opening hours. You want to make a reservation because they only have so many film readers. And if you don't have a reservation, they may not have a spot for you to do your research.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're doing research in Dresden, in the city, in the church archive in Dresden, I think they currently have a waiting time for, 9 months or so.
Oh, dear.
So that is something, really something you have to plan in advance. But remember, Dresden is currently starting to upload an Archion.
Right.
So you might...
That might be worth the wait.
Exactly.
I've not had trouble. I visited a number of archives on this visit, and last year also. I didn't have trouble making reservations a few weeks ahead, maybe 2 or 3 months ahead, and it was always fine. But it is, they do expect that. That is mandatory that you make a reservation.
Absolutely.
And you will, their opening hours are not just limited in terms of no Fridays or holidays. Also, they may just be open till 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So know the opening hours. You do not have a whole day there.
Yeah, and come in time.
Be there when they open, and those few hours that they're open pass quickly. So you might need to plan an extra day or two just because they're only open for 5 hours or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The archive in Catholic Diocese Archive in Regensburg actually has a lunch hour, and everyone needs to leave while they have their lunch hour. So,
yep.
You know, everyone's different, and just inform yourself ahead of time so you know what to expect.
Yeah, and have cash with you.
You will need to pay a fee. There is a user fee per day. It's not outrageous, but you will have to pay it, and you'll have to pay it in cash. And you will have to pay for copies, and depending on the archive, that can be quite expensive. Or sometimes it's just 20 cents. So just read on their website exactly what their regulations are so you know what to expect.
And if you're unsure, just send them an email.
Yeah, they're usually very prompt and helpful with answering. So, you know, don't let the rules scare you off, but they are rules and you need to adhere to them. And coming as a foreigner into a German archive like this, you will not likely get help with reading the records. It's a very formal, quiet place, and you can do your work, but if you are unsure about whether you can handle the records, you need to bring help, because there will not be anyone there who is available to help you understand. They will give you an introduction in how to use the machines, where to find the films, but beyond that, they will not sit down with you and help you do your research.
Yeah. I remember one archive, there's a lady, and she always said, "I'm not paid to do that. I'm not paid to do that."
Oh, dear. So, but there are genealogists who you can hire to come and help you, and actually that might be worth looking into if there's a local genealogist who might be very happy to meet with you, maybe even ahead of time, look at your research, and then help you in the archive find your records. So that's good if you plan ahead. And
I mean, you can even plan the entire trip through a company. So they really get you there. They get the nice and cozy hotels, and they will help you in the archive, and they will make an appointment and everything. So you won't need to take care of any of these things. So that might also be an opportunity if you find this is too much for you to handle, or you just afraid of maybe getting in touch with these nasty Germans. there are services that make your life much easier.
Yeah, and I think that's been such a growing field in genealogy, is genealogy heritage travel, and if you are in a position to do that, I mean, that would be just wonderful. Everything would be tailored to your needs as the family historian, and, you know, they would not necessarily take you to the average touristy places, but you could come and expect to learn everything you want to learn about your genealogy. What a dream come true.
It is. And I just had one of these experiences that I had a client come to me, and I managed to find someone who was in charge of the entire history of this little town, and he agreed to meet us, and he had all the information the family needed. So we only knew the birthplace, and we came home and with all the information 300 years back. We also knew what happened before they immigrated, that there were floodings. There was whatever, and he knew cousins, and he gave the address and the email, and so we came back well prepared. So we only spent one day there, and
this was all kind of unexpected. So your client did the ahead of time research to make sure he or she knew where to go, and happened.
Exactly. So we had done that part of research already, so we knew, we had the records to know that this is exactly the town we're talking about. And then it only took one more day to have hundreds of years of family history and everything. So I just picked them up at the hotel, so they didn't really have to do anything. It was entire day that was planned.
It's often that way in German genealogy, that you just have to take that one turn, that one thing you need to find, and then you have an avalanche of possibilities.
Exactly. And very often you just don't know how to do that yourself. Right. You just need a local because it's not easy finding these people. Mm-hmm. You just have to know who to talk to and who to find and how to ask.
Yeah.
There are different ways of asking. So you just need to kind of know their language. And I don't mean German or English. I mean the being nice and please help me language.
Right.
So that's important as well. So there's a lot there, but sometimes you simply need help. And it's a good investment. Because it maybe you pay 5 hours of just for some research in the beginning, and then there you go, or you book a day trip without needing to worry about anything.
Yeah.
So
you might have the experience of your lifetime and the most unique travel experience
that
you could have.
Exactly. And you do need to prepare before coming. You just need to. There's no way. If you want to do research, you need an excellent preparation to really make it worth it. I mean, you're coming thousands of miles to Germany, and you really want to make this the best trip ever. So you simply need to prepare.
Right.
And to understand that that you need certain information to start, and sometimes you simply do need help, and help is available.
Yeah.
So from different sides.
Yeah. And it's so fun for us researchers too when we can help someone like that and open new worlds for them. It's what makes us happy, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that I'm doing ancestral travel as well in Germany, because I go to places that I've never been.
That's true.
Right now I'm doing my Mecklenburg ancestors. So it's so many things for me to learn. And I have to do it exactly the same way as I prepare for our clients. I simply have to go and get the records first, and then I have to see and find somebody who's able to tell me more about the area, and I have to read about the history of this area so that I can really understand how they lived. And mine constantly moved. So it's very, very important to know these migration patterns. So that's a lot of history, a lot of social history, a lot of local history I need to get information about.
Yeah.
And I need people who tell me, who give me hints.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, even for me, just living 200 kilometers south of where my ancestors came from. So
it's such fascinating work, and it's such interesting learning, and don't miss out on that.
I find it wonderful, and sometimes I find the houses my ancestors lived in, and it's really an odd feeling. Also visiting the church they were baptized,
right,
to really stand there,
and
really imagining the baptism. That's a great feeling. That really gets you closer, I think. It gets you connected to your ancestors.
Well, on my father and I, on our trip 3 years ago, when we went to Bohemia, that little church had been in the area right on the border between the Czech Republic and Germany, where everything had been pretty much abandoned and it had almost collapsed, and they had restored it. So it was very beautiful, but it still had a lot of the old graves. My father and I went to mass there, and to sit in those pews. It was the original, this church on the outside had been restored, but it was the original wooden pews that his grandmother, as a young girl, had sat in and where she had been confirmed. And we have a picture of her first communion with her candle. That's the youngest picture we have on her of her that was taken there. And that was an overwhelming experience for us to just be there and feel like we traveled back over 100 years in time, and we're in her place. And I think that's one of the most memorable experiences I had in my life was attending mass in that church. And I'm not even very religious, but for me, that was unique.
I think that sometimes you can feel the spirit of our ancestors and of our roots. And even if the roots were cut off, I think we are able to somehow connect to them. Maybe grow new roots in that very place. I don't know. But it is something special. And it doesn't work everywhere. I've been to places my ancestors lived where I just felt that, okay, interesting. And other places where they only lived for a few years, and I walked through the church and I felt overwhelmed. It's something special. I don't really know what's happening there and how it happens, but it's definitely worth putting in time and money just to meet them that way. Not to meet them on records, but to meet them in real, so to say, in with the place they lived. Well, Uta, I think we talked about a lot of very interesting things and important things to know before traveling to Germany and what to see when you're in Germany. Is there anything you would like to add?
Well, I certainly am almost a little sad to go back home. Now, after we talked, I feel like I should do more
We should just hop
exploring.
into the car and drive, shouldn't we?
We should. I hope that we encourage the listeners to explore and not be afraid and come to Germany. It's a very welcoming country. They're wonderful people. I think you'll like it here. And just, take your time to, don't rush through it. Take your time, enjoy what you can learn about your ancestor in their home. And I have a feeling they would smile that if they knew that their great great grandchild was coming to learn about them. I think, don't you think so as well?
Oh,
They would.
I definitely. I can imagine them. Well, my ancestors certainly did.
Wonderful.
So, thank you so much for joining me for
Oh,
this
it was fun. I would
podcast.
like to come back someday. If you put me in your house again, I would love to visit. I'll
I'll think
visit you
about
again
it.
soon.
Oh, yes, you're always welcome.
Berlin's a great city too. I have to say that right now for your listeners. It's just, come to Germany.
Yes, and there's nothing I can add to this. So thank you, Ute. See you soon next time.
Thank you.
And to all my listeners, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And you will find more information on my Facebook page at Facebook/German Genealogy Girl. There you can read and look at some pictures. So thanks again for listening. Take care wherever you are. Auf Wiederhören, your German Genealogy Girl. That wraps it up for this episode of the German Genealogy Girls podcast. Thank you for joining me exploring the hidden gems of German genealogy. Remember to visit my website at GermanGenealogyGirl.com and learn even more about German genealogy. Until we meet again, and Auf Wiederhören!